You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil, and we're joined today by the Washington Post's Ben Golliver. We're going to talk about Justice Winslow's breakout last few games and then look ahead to next week a little bit later on in the show. But I want to start with some more Dwayne Wade, LeBron James talk, because Ben, you were in LA covering their final meeting earlier in the week. There was a lot of hoopla leading up to that game, but would you say that that final matchup delivered on the hype?
I was a little worried on Dwayne Wade's behalf. I mean, he started very, very slow in that game. And, you know, after sitting through Kobe Bryant's last couple of years, I have seen the 0 for 6, 0 for 7, 0 for 8 starts go the wrong direction. But I actually signaled the turning point as Gabby and Jessica Alba taking their seats courtside. For whatever reason, as soon as they got there in the second half, everything turned around for Wade. And he started making some shots, get into a rhythm. And then he also really started seeking out the ball very aggressively, especially late in that game. I loved the lockdown defense by LeBron. You know, maybe the first time he's played perimeter defense all season. So that was nice of Wade to bring that out of him. But it was just a special moment. To be honest, it was one of those games where the post-game atmosphere was better than the actual game. I mean, it wasn't really that tense. It wasn't that electric in the building. It was a good game, but nothing special. But the post-game really had, you know, goosebumps on my arms. I mean, the jersey swap, you know, 100 media members sort of like crowding around them to kind of get pictures of the hug. I mean, both these guys, Dwayne Wade and LeBron, are very, very good at sort of milking moments. You know, they're very TV savvy, camera savvy, but both of them really seemed genuinely touched by the idea that this was the last time they were going to be able to play each other. And it was, just great to see the genuine emotion on both sides. And their post-game press conferences were just spectacular. LeBron, you know, speaking at length about how much Wade had meant to his career, about how welcome he was when LeBron first, you know, got to Miami. And then also just the growth that they've had as players and also as fathers. I mean, I think LeBron went out of his way to mention how, you know, Dwayne Wade's gotten custody of his children and sort of raised them while he's been, flying all over the country as a professional basketball player. I thought that was a nice tribute there as well from two guys who have known each other very, very well. So it was absolutely a memorable moment. One of those games where you're probably going to remember the aftermath, though, more than what actually took place on the court.
Now, I'm kind of glad you brought up the milking the moment thing, and maybe I shouldn't go back about this because I've been making this point recently, so I want your perspective from somebody who's not affiliated with the team, who doesn't cover them regularly. But Wade has made frequent comments that this is not a farewell tour, but it's clearly a farewell tour. Do you agree or disagree based on what you saw last covering that game against Los Angeles?
Well, not to only look at things through a Kobe-centric lens, but Kobe's farewell tour was so long and so emotional and so over the top that he's actually given lots of cover to the next generation of stars. So Wade would really have to go out of his way to be more ridiculous than what Kobe did. And frankly, watching the Kobe farewell tour play out in person regularly got to be a little too much, especially All-Star weekend. I mean, it was just out of control. You know, you had the international media members bringing Kobe gifts and like painting pictures of him and like, you know, kind of handing them to him during these press conferences. So far, I haven't seen it go that over the top with Wade. But yes, I mean, there's no question he's milking the last dance for everything it's worth. He doesn't want the music to stop. And I got to say, full props to coming up with the trading jerseys idea. I've always loved that in soccer. I wish that would become more of a thing in basketball because I do like this idea of mutual respect and being able, I think it's just a good sign of sportsmanship. Yeah. So for Wade to kind of do this night after night and then to do it with LeBron and how they wrote the messages to each other. I mean, LeBron was clutching that jersey very tight on his way out of the Staples Center. And that wasn't an act because the cameras had been off of him for minutes. You could tell that was something that he was going to cherish. And like I said, that's one of those situations where because these stars are so big in terms of NBA history, and because the good nature and goodwill between those two guys is so genuine, it actually didn't bother me, even though, you know, outsiders might say, hey, look, this is a little bit over the top.
There was a time, too, where, and I don't know when that time was, and I'm actually trying to think, like, when was the turning point? Because 80s, 90s basketball, we always, you know, people talk about how competitive it was, how you didn't team up, you tried to play against each other, which was all horse crap in the first place. But, like, there was a time where Dwayne Wade and LeBron James would have gotten killed for swapping jerseys and this mutual respect, even though they're not on the same team, and kind of, forged that friendship before they were both in Miami. And you hear a little bit of that on the periphery, and that's fine. That's going to be there. But I'm glad that I'm glad we can kind of most for like a majority, it feels like, are sort of celebrating it and just sort of recognizing how cool it is. Except for David, who thinks it's corny and over the top.
No, it's a good point though. I mean, imagine Kobe. Would he want anybody else's jersey?
No.
Like, would Mike have wanted anybody else's jersey? No. But I do think that what they did was revolutionary. I mean, the way that they teamed up at that time of their career, the way that they pieced it together, you know, with Bosch to kind of become the center of the entire NBA overnight, was different. It was new. And LeBron mentioned that in his tribute to Wade, basically saying, like, he didn't have to do that. He could have just been the man by himself in Miami and gone forward, you know, for the next 10 years in that manner. And he didn't have to, you know, bring in somebody else who ultimately eclipsed him in terms of popularity internationally and star power and everything else. And I do think that their relationship is special. I mean, another good comparison point here is like Steph and KD. I mean, those guys are arguably the best duo since Shaq and Kobe. I mean, you could put them right there with prime Wade and prime LeBron in terms of how good they are. Two MVP level players, multiple scoring titles between the two of them, you know, finals MVPs from Durant and possibly from Curry in the future. And yet, do they have that warm sensation, that warm feeling? I mean, these guys make more headlines for their sneaker rivalry, you know, Nike versus Under Armour, than they do for being best buddies. I mean, it seems like it's a much more professional relationship between the two of them. They're, you know, teaming up on the court to win as, you know, compared to just teaming up to be best friends for life. And I do think that that's what makes these guys unique. I mean, that's how we're going to remember LeBron and Wade and Bosch, as being, you know, a different generation, a different approach to being a superstar, a more modern approach, if you want to call it that, an AAU approach, if you want to call it that. And I think this was a very fitting way to kind of seal up that friendship on the last night they played each other.
Yeah, that makes their that super team so much different than basically every other super team we've seen, because it was kind of their decision, and Pat Riley will balk at that, but it was kind of their decision to get together, and they kind of had that planned out where, you know, you can look at Philadelphia, Boston, like whatever you want to call a super team or like a semi-super team, whatever we're going to define these as, it's all constructed by management. Even like the Lakers with Steve Nash, Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, they're like, oh, this is our big three. And it's like, well, they didn't want to play together. And that was the biggest difference. To me, going forward, yeah, it sucks that this was the last time we got to see LeBron versus Dwayne Wade, but it kind of gives me the warm fuzzies knowing that, like, after the game, Dwayne Wade was over LeBron James's house drinking a bottle of wine. You know, it's kind of like, I know Seinfeld, that run is over, but don't you smile at any time you see Jerry and George on screen together at any point? Like, don't you just, like, it makes you feel like you just want to believe that they're still friends? This is the case where it's really actually happening, where Dwayne Wade, LeBron, and even Chris Bosh, they're still friends with him. They talk, they chill out, like, they hang out. Like, every time, like, Wade is going to live part-time in LA when he retires, and that's going to, and with LeBron there, and that's going to be a really cool thing.
It would bug me if they were just hanging out and being buddy-buddy, but then during the game, they're trash-talking, and at the buzzer, I think Wade went over to go grab LeBron, right? And at the moment, you're like, oh my God, what's happening? Like, are these guys about to, like, fight? And of course not. They were just going to hug. But there was still that competitive tension there, right? And that's what makes this friendship great. If it was just, hey, we hang out, we don't care about wins and losses, you know, we're just too cool for school, we're two superstars that have a lot that we can relate to each other and most other people can't, you know, like, be on our level, then it would be annoying. But the fact that they still, you know, last second of the game, Wade wants to try to get left, LeBron knows he wants to try to get left, or LeBron's at the free throw line, he's been struggling with clutch free throws all season long. So, of course, Wade comes up and immediately tries to get into his head. That's really what made it special.
D-Wade talking trash to him at the free throw line. LeBron wanting nothing of it in the fourth quarter. I love that. Like, that was cool. LeBron said, and Ben, you mentioned this, that he owes a lot of his success to Dwayne Wade. Obviously had to pair up with Wade in Miami to win his first championship. How much truth do we think is there that LeBron really... I know he's being authentic, but it's kind of an interesting to think about, like, if LeBron had never teamed up with Dwayne Wade and how he kind of, like, picked Dwayne Wade out of the lineup and basically said, this guy gets it, and I need to be with him and to figure this thing out. And how much do you think that'll play into Dwayne Wade's legacy, David? What do you think about that?
As far as his legacy, I'm not sure that anybody's going to be looking at him as being this ultimate mentor or even an inspirational force for a guy like LeBron, because I think the assumption is that somebody like LeBron was already so talented by the time he joined Wade in Miami that maybe that wasn't necessary. Maybe it was a little overstated on LeBron's part, but I do think that there was some guidance there. Maybe, you know, obviously what we saw, what we didn't see from, you know, behind the scenes. I think for a guy like Dwayne Wade, who had already learned from somebody like Shaquille O'Neal, the process of being a superstar in the league. And I think you can't deny that that was something that Wade needed to learn. Like there was burgeoning talent there before Shaquille O'Neal came to Miami. But once Shaq got there, it was a much bigger, much brighter stage. And Wade had to learn how to embrace that. And I think he certainly did. And I think the manifestation of that clearly was the 2006 NBA Finals. But even then, in the years following that, there was a part of Wade knowing what it was like to be a superstar and having to carry a team single-handedly because there wasn't a lot of talent there. And then once LeBron came on there was probably some shared feelings of what that was like, that burden of having to carry a team. And then, you know, from LeBron's perspective, how to kind of fine tune all that skill that he has and how to continue to work and develop. So I think when he says that he's pushed him, I think that's probably pretty true. At the same time, I think it's a little overstated, but it's good to know that they have that kind of mutual respect, that LeBron does see Wade as somebody who was, if not necessarily a mentor, at least an inspiration or a guiding force so that he could become the ultimate player, perhaps the best player in NBA history.
That was really well said. Can I just chime in? Like, in the history books, we're going to look back at LeBron's stats, and, you know, the next generations are never going to be able to completely comprehend LeBron. It's not going to make any sense when he's like, you know, probably retires as first all-time in points, maybe second all-time in assists. He's going to own every single playoff record and everything else. But if he doesn't win another ring, he's basically stuck on three, right? And There was the miracle ring in Cleveland, which, you know, what one shot or one turnover goes the other way. They don't win that one. If he doesn't go to Miami, we're going to be looking at a situation where he could be playing 20 years in the NBA. He only has one ring, or he could be the most dominant player in the NBA for more than a decade. And he's retiring with quote unquote only three rings, you know, after being in the league and having this unmatched longevity. It's pretty wild to think about what would have happened had he just re-signed in Cleveland in 2010. And his direct quote was, to get where I wanted to go, to win at the highest level, I needed Dwayne Wade. He's basically saying, if I had stayed in Cleveland, it wasn't going to happen. And even if you try to imagine him peaking like he did down in Miami in like 2012, 2013, if he was still a one-man team in Cleveland, they're probably making the finals. He's probably dragging them to the finals, but they're probably not getting over the top against, you know, the Spurs of the world or the Lakers of that era, or, you know, eventually the Warriors would come along. Everything would look a lot different. And, you know,
what happens if the Thunder end up winning a finals because the Heat aren't the big three Heat aren't standing in their way? Does Kevin Durant ever go to Golden State? I mean, there's so many ways that this could go.
That's a great question. I mean, who would you take in 2012, Thunder Cavs in the finals, if LeBron's the only star in Cleveland? You'd probably take Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Anderson Varejao's past his peak.
I mean, those teams were rough. Right. I mean, they were pretty, pretty rough. And they're trying to throw Shaquille and O'Neal into the mix late career. I mean, they were pulling out every possible stop. And so I do think that while LeBron is probably trying to tip his hat and send Wade out in style, I actually think there's some like genuine, like, I owe this man. Right. I think that is a true sense that he feels, and he should, because if not for that era, his legacy looks totally different.
Do you think this sets up LeBron as kind of, you know, taking that argument a little further, does that set him up as kind of the anti-Kobe or the anti-Jordan, that he's going to be so statistically dominant, but at the same time, we're going to learn to somewhat de-emphasize the ring as what makes a great player stand out? Because obviously that's the long argument for Kobe fans and for Jordan fans. I mean, I think Jordan has done more, I think, statistically than Kobe has. But at the same time, you know, the argument that he's got six championships, that he was 6-for-6 in the finals, can we look at potentially down the line, or is that the legacy of LeBron ultimately, that we can look at him being as good as he is and owning every record, like you said, and at the same time, potentially only being a 3-time champion, or maybe had he not gone to Miami, even a 1-time champion? Is that set him up as kind of the anti-Kobe, anti-Michael?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think it's probably going to be a distinction where he has the greatest career, but he's maybe not thought of as like the greatest champion or the greatest winner or the greatest all-around player. I mean, that will be the difference between him and Mike. I mean, I think ultimately if he just keeps playing like he is for the next 3 or 4 years, he will have that title, the greatest career, in terms of numbers and accomplishments. I think the other thing that really plays into his legacy favor, though, is the streak of finals appearances, because yeah. That is a really strong counter argument to people who say you only won 3 times, right? We could say, look, I was there, you know, 8 years in a row. Like, what more do you want from me? I was carrying these teams. And so I don't think he's going to necessarily be diminished in comparisons against a player like Kobe Bryant. But I do think he needs to win more titles if he really wants to surpass Michael Jordan. I think he can stack statistics for the next 5 years. I think the majority opinion will be that Mike was more dominant for a long stretch of his prime than LeBron was in terms of being able to translate his individual play to team success. And therefore Mike deserves to have sort of that GOAT title. And if LeBron, you know, wins a title with 3 separate franchises and he brings the Lakers somehow to the promised land, that would start to shift. And I think the arguments would change very quickly.
Ben, you've apparently decided that Justice Winslow is the best 3-point shooter in the
yes.
NBA. Is it just a matter of time before he catches Steph for the most 3-pointers made in a season?
My eyes were bugging out of my head. I had 2 takeaways, actually, from that game that were non-Wade LeBron related. First of all, they do not miss Hassan Whiteside in any way. And if they just amnestied him off the face of the planet, like not even just his contract, but they just erased him completely, I'm not sure anyone would notice. That was my first takeaway, and I know that sounds a little harsh, but it's
no,
true.
No, it does not. Nope. You're on the perfect right podcast for that, let me tell you.
Yeah, and I'm not even trying to, like, banter or play up to you guys. I realize you're anti-Whiteside. I'm just saying, like, if you were a random fan in the stands, you didn't follow these guys closely, you would not think that they were missing their, like, double-double center in any way in terms of how they played and how their rotation was constructed and everything else. I mean, going from like Bam straight to Kelly, that works. Like it's not the best in the world, but it's not like, oh, we have to go trade for a Whiteside to plug him in. Like, you know, it's not a panic type hole situation like a lot of teams have there in the middle. The other thing with Justice is, man, like this guy was red hot. I think he had 6 3-pointers. I never thought I would actually see him be able to hit so many 3-pointers that he could have a 3-point celebration. That was a real revelation. And apparently he does. He's like kind of cocks his arm or whatever. He is a really interesting player. And I love like the possible combination of him with Josh kind of going forward as wings of the future. If he's still hitting, like if he can get himself just, you know, a lock in reliable 3-point shot. Because he was left open a lot. I mean, I was watching that game thinking, like, look, the Lakers definitely need to update their scouting reports. Like, somebody screwed up in the film room because he's just getting clean looks, even after he's hit shot after shot. But, boy, that was pretty special. Obviously, he doesn't do that every night, and you don't want to judge guys on their best evenings. But it did get me pretty excited about, hey, what this could look like going forward if this progress continues.
Well, I think a lot of the talk here locally and on our show has been, you know, Justice emerging as a possible point guard of the future for this team. And I know that we've seen, you know, some lineups with him playing the point guard position, the de facto point guard position, with Goran Dragic kind of moving off ball a little bit. And obviously Josh Richardson would be a great fit alongside Winslow as well. Do you see enough smooth ball handling and playmaking ability from Winslow where you think he could take over the point guard duties full time? Because there seems to be a pretty strongly contested debate among Heat fans whether or not he can handle that position, whether or not it's going to take some time, or maybe he's just not cut in order to handle that of those duties full time. What do you think?
I'm a little more skeptical there. I would like him more as a secondary ball handler or playmaker than as a primary. But I mean, look, like this guy couldn't even get the shots up, you know, his first year in the league or his second year in the league. And now he's hitting them with regularity and looking confident doing it. That level of progress is exciting to me. Like I like when guys clearly fill in holes of their game. And so if you're telling me you know, where's Justice Winslow going to be in 2 years? You know, it might be kind of a lazy comparison, but it reminds me a little bit of like Jimmy Butler, right? Where he comes in,
right.
He doesn't have the ball in his hands a lot. He's not really known as a shooter, but he builds himself into a guy where now he's a lead playmaker. The ball's in his hands a lot, and he's, you know, running pick and roll and getting things done. And, you know, he's becoming a focal point of an offense. I think that would be the sort of the best case trajectory or track for a player like Justice. But if you're saying, can he do it right now on a high level? I would say the answer is no for now.
It's Friday, so it's time to look ahead to next week's schedule and guess the Heat's record. We're adding a new wrinkle to the Friday pod. Thanks to listener Dylan Smith, who suggested we also pick out who Dwayne Wade will swap jerseys with. I love this idea, so we're going to run with it. Now, Wade might not swap jerseys every game. He just kind of did an interview and said he doesn't want 82 sweaty jerseys at the end of the year, but that's no fun, so we're going to just try to guess who he'll swap with if he goes ahead and swaps and when he does. So let's start with tonight's game against the Grizzlies. David, who do you got in the game first?
Who do I have as far as the winner or loser? I think, a lot depends on whether or not Hassan Whiteside is rejoining the team by this point. Obviously, we're recording this before Friday night's game, so we're not quite sure if Whiteside will be starting in place of Bam Adebayo. That changes things pretty dramatically there. I would have to give the edge to Memphis at Memphis because I feel like Miami's going to be, coming off. They're going to be in their fifth game of the six-game road trip. It's a difficult matchup. Memphis obviously can slow the pace down. Miami likes to play at a quicker pace, especially if Bam Adebayo's there. And if Whiteside's there, well, he's just not particularly efficient. So even though that'll be a slower pace with him in that lineup, I've got to give the edge to Memphis.
I've got Memphis too, but I think the real interesting question here is on the jersey swap. I've got a real left field nomination for you guys.
Okay.
What about Joakim Noah? You know, the Hollywood is hell, Heatles, you know, remember that era of like the bad blood? Can we get a jersey swap to bury all of that and go out on top with rivalry officially in the past? What about that?
I've got to disagree with that one. I don't see that as a realistic possibility. I think there was general, I don't think there was pretty genuine animosity between those two. So I can't see it, to be honest with you.
I kind of agree. I think there might still maybe be some lingering bitterness, but it would be an interesting thing, right? To see if Dwayne Wade would do that, especially as almost like if he's got beef with like Marc Gasol or Mike Conley for some reason to like give it to like the newest Grizzly who's been there for like 4 minutes.
Yeah, he won't give it to Gasol because Gasol had his boy Fizdale fired. Yeah. So that's definitely not going to happen. I could see Conley being the likely recipient.
Yeah, we've had some left field guys. Like, didn't he give it to Montrezl Harrell in that Clippers game?
He did. He could give it to Jaren.
Well, I think the best decision from like an investment standpoint is to get an autographed Jaren jersey because that's going to be worth probably hundreds of thousands of dollars by the time Jaren's a Hall of Famer. As you guys know, I love Jaren. I'm just trying to come up with the zaniest opportunities. I mean, look, if you're going to have 82 sweaty jerseys, you might as well get a real rare relic from this little short-term Joakim Noah stint down in Memphis.
I've got this as an L for the Heat. I just think that Memphis is better. They play in New Orleans. They play the Pelicans on Sunday. They have already played the Pelicans once. They won 106-101 earlier on the season. Dwayne Wade already swapped jerseys with Anthony Davis. So this could be an opportunity where Wade says, you know what, I'm taking a break this game. Or maybe there's somebody else in New Orleans that Wade wants to swap jerseys with. But let's start with the game, David, win or loss for Miami.
I think it's another loss. I think they're going to unfortunately be trying to just kind of wrap it up, go home, and they usually kind of fall apart at the end of a long road trip like this. I can't see them mustering the kind of energy to knock off New Orleans, even as they're finding a way to struggle. As far as the jersey's concerned, didn't Nikola Mirotic play alongside Wade in Chicago? Couldn't that be a reunion of sorts?
You read my mind. Haven't they both had facial issues over the years, too? Didn't Wade have something like that? They have to wear a mask at some point. Maybe they could be mask brothers as well. I think the Pelicans need wins. Like, they really need wins. So if they don't win this game, we're going to be talking Anthony Davis rumors, I think, heading forward regularly at this point.
Yeah, I think this is a loss for the Heat, a win for the Pelicans, too. Dark horse candidate Jahlil Okafor works out at the same Miami gym as Dwayne Wade. Maybe they have a standing relationship there. I don't know. It could be, maybe. Thursday, December 20th, last game of the week, they play Houston. Mm-hmm. The Rockets will be on the second night of a back-to-back. That's important to keep in mind. What about the game, David?
that's pretty tough. I mean, teams usually struggle back at home because after a long road trip. I could see them kind of getting caught up and trying to figure their way through bills and picking up dry cleaning and all the different kind of things that happen in daily life after, you know, you're gone for basically 2 weeks of your life. It's going to be an adjustment period there. You know, they're going to be practicing quite a bit, even though they should be taking a break and recovering from that long road trip. I could see them struggling against a team like Houston, even though obviously Houston is not at 100%. As far as a jersey, it has to be CP3, right? Just because of the friendship off the court. I don't know that we're going to get the same kind of levels of emotion that we saw between Wade and LeBron, but I think clearly he wants to give it to his friends. We know he's not going to give it to Harden. He'd rather give it to Eric Gordon over James Harden at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's an underrated and probably will go overlooked, head-to-head rivalry between those two guys because, you know, they've been close for years, like you mentioned. I think Houston will get this one, and I hate to do this, but now I feel like I'm predicting an 0-3 week. That's not very neighborly of me. You guys invite me on your show, and I'm just predicting L's left and right.
It's all right. Join the club. We've done the same.
I've actually got this as a win. I think the Rockets on the second night of back-to-back, I think the Heat just – they get it. You know, I think they're going to be coming off a few different losses. First game at home. Not sure. I don't think that they're going to be wearing the new pink Vice jerseys that game.
Not yet. No, not till after, I think.
But they might be wearing the black Vice jerseys. I think they're on schedule too, but they could swap last minute like they have been the last few home games.
They've lost all their games in the Vice jerseys, Wes. You wrote about this yourself, so.
All right, that's all we have for today. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts, and leave us a rating or review while you're there. Connect on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next time.